Hi, and welcome to this podcast for RiskMap 2016. I'm Gala Riani, Director of Analysis for the Middle East and North Africa at Control Risks. In this podcast, we will talk about how geopolitical interests will be played out in Syria in 2016. I'm joined by my colleagues, Anna Walker, our Associate Director for Europe and the former Soviet Union, based in London, Graham Griffiths, our analyst covering Saudi Arabia and the Gulf, based in Dubai, and Mike Moran, our Managing Director for Global Risk Analysis based in New York. Let's turn to Anna first.
We've seen Russia and Turkey involved in the Syrian crisis for some time. Can you tell us a little bit about how you expect Russia and Turkey to pursue their interests in Syria in 2016?
Yes, I think we'll continue to see Russia pursuing very much the same strategy and very much the same tactics as it has done in 2015. So that means continued support for Assad's administration, primarily in the form of airstrikes against rebel groups in Syria, and then also the entrenchment of its military forces in Syria and the surrounding region. Now, even since September, we've seen Russia build up its military capabilities both on the ground in Syria and at sea, and it's likely to maintain this presence for really as long as it considers necessary. I don't think, though, we will see any deployment of ground troops by Russia unless the security threat to its existing forces and military facilities in Syria were to really escalate. Over the longer term, Russia's goal is to reassert its position as a key regional and international actor and to ensure that it has a very much a leading role at the negotiating table if and when talks over a political resolution to the conflict are actually held. Now, Turkey has two main interests in Syria. The first is to prevent the Kurdish Democratic Union Party, which is the main Kurdish rebel group within Syria, from actually gaining strength. It very much perceives this party as a threat to its own domestic security interests. And then its second key interest is to weaken and eventually depose Assad. It does not want to see Assad remain in power in any shape or form. Now, in the aftermath of the incident in which Turkey shot down one of Russia's military jets, Turkey has very much less leeway to conduct its own independent policy in Syria. It has become much more reliant on NATO and the US. And this principally means that it will have to limit its support to those rebel groups who are actually backed by the US and NATO. In essence, a continuation of its policies that we've seen over the past year or so, but in a much more restrained manner.
Thank you, Anna. So it really sounds as though these two players are very far from each other when it comes to Syria policy. Do you see any prospect in 2016 of, first of all, them moving closer to each other, but also, secondly, each of them moving closer to some of the diplomatic solutions that the Western alliances have put forward?
I think it's very difficult at the moment to see Turkey and Russia having any meeting of minds over Syria. Their positions are still just so far apart, their goals very divergent, and their bilateral relations are actually approaching rock bottom. If anything, we may see relations between the two countries get worse before they actually get better. Any suggestion, for example, that Russia is supporting Kurdish groups in Syria, that would go down extremely badly in Turkey. And Turkey's very sensitive about this issue. Now, both Turkey and Russia do have a common interest in defeating Islamic State. But for neither of them is that necessarily a first priority and is unlikely to become so in the coming months. Now, what we are likely to see is that both of them will find some common ground with the Western alliance, even if not with each other. Turkey will be forced to move closer to the Western alliance because this is really the only way in which it can have any influence on policy. And its only influence on Russian policy will be through NATO. Independently, it doesn't have much power. And I think this is how the situation between the two countries will eventually de-escalate. Russia is also likely to come somewhat closer to the Western alliance, though very much on its terms, and really only in a situation where it's guaranteed a key role in the conflict resolution process.
Thank you very much, Anna. Now to talk about some other very important players in this conflict, let's turn to Graham to discuss Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states' role.
Graham, Saudi Arabia suffered a series of militant attacks that were claimed by the Islamic State in 2015. Some of the other Gulf states have obviously also been affected. This seems to be the most palpable impact so far of the Syrian war on Saudi Arabia and some of its neighbors to date. Can you tell us a little bit about how you expect the kingdom to approach the Syrian crisis in 2016?
Well, I think Saudi Arabia's policy toward the Syrian crisis in 2016 will largely be a continuation of its policy of 2015 and of previous years. I think Saudi Arabia has a fairly consistent stance that, you know, the Syrian conflict at root is caused by the presence of the Syrian government and Iranian regional intervention, and that the kind of rise of the Islamic State, which is obviously having an impact, as you said, not only in Syria and Iraq, but also in the Gulf states, is ultimately a derivative of the kind of oppression of the Syrian people and Iran's military interventions in both Syria and Iraq. So the Saudis see that in order to address the Syrian crisis, we first have to address the presence of the Syrian regime and the presence of Bashar al-Assad at the head of that regime.
Is there agreement among the Gulf states in terms of how to approach this, and what will that look like in 2016?
I think increasingly the Gulf states have more of a united stance on how to approach the Syrian conflict. Of course, in the kind of early years in the conflict, there was a bit of backing of different groups, especially by Saudi Arabia and Qatar, as well as private funding coming out of kind of all the Gulf states, but particularly being mediated via Kuwait through private individuals. But I think as the Syrian conflict has continued, and as Saudi Arabia has decided to take a more assertive regional role in response to, again, what it sees as Iran's destabilizing influence, it has kind of brought the Gulf states to some extent behind it.
So what is the kingdom ultimately going to try to achieve, and by what means, do you think?
I think we see that the Saudi government is attempting to forge a more united Syrian opposition through, at the moment, bringing various Syrian opposition groups together for a meeting in Riyadh, that they ultimately want to both present the Syrian opposition as a more united negotiating front in eventual peace negotiations, but also make the opposition a more effective military counterweight to the regime, to keep the pressure up on the regime and its allies to ultimately present concessions that the Saudis think are the key to resolving the conflict, and that's namely the ultimate departure of Bashar al-Assad.
Thank you, Graham. Let's go over to Mike and talk to him about the U.S. perspective. Mike, how will the U.S. approach Syria in 2016? It's Obama's last year in office. What's it going to look like?
Well, you've got really conflicting frictions in the United States right now. On the one hand, you've got the center of both parties, both the Republican and Democratic parties in the United States, trying very hard to hold off an emotional response to the realization that these attacks in San Bernardino, California, were carried out by at least adherents of ISIS, if not directly under ISIS's direction. So that has really changed the debate in the 2016 presidential campaign. The leading candidates in that campaign on the Republican side are talking in draconian terms about things like sealing the United States off from Muslims, having registries of Muslim Americans, all sorts of rather inflammatory rhetoric that the center of that party and the Democrats are pretty shocked by. The general feeling is that the Obama administration is trying very hard to respond tactically without committing itself to putting ground troops back into Iraq in a major way. They want to retain the ability to use special forces troops and to you ramp up the airstrikes. But, you know, the other side of that argument, at least from the United States and from the far right of the Republicans, is that that's what we've been doing, and look what happened in California. So they are drawing a direct line between what's going on in terms of the airstrike campaign and what happened in California and, in fact, in Paris, and saying, look, it's not working. We've got to try something else. So Obama's going to spend the last year of his tenure under enormous pressure to do more.
So will Obama choose the military route, or are there other ways of doing this?
Well, I think there's no way around a uptick in military activity of some sort, if only to repackage a policy that's been in place for a while. There has already been an announcement that more special forces are going in, and the pace of airstrikes can always be increased. That said, I think the Obama administration is really hoping that some kind of a grand bargain can be struck by the very disparate parties who have been involved in the proxy battles in Syria and Western Iraq. The trick there, of course, is that ties with Russia are very fraught over the Ukraine conflict and many other things. It's a very difficult challenge to bring together these parties and the Europeans and the Turks and to talk about this in any way that would lead to a mutually satisfactory outcome in Syria.
Thank you very much to Mike, Graham, Anna for your input. These are, of course, issues that we will be revisiting regularly over the coming 12 months. I'm Gala Riani, Director of Analysis for the Middle East and North Africa with Control Risks. Thank you very much for listening to this podcast for RiskMap 2016.